Hi, this is Sugatha Varnakula-Surya. I'm founder and managing director of Thalamus Labs, ex-McKinsey, two-time entrepreneur, and a pretty active angel investor. Really great to speak with you today, and also great to have with us Dan Toma. And Dan is an innovation practitioner and author of the book Corporate Startup. And Dan, let me hand it off to you to give us a little introduction.
Thank you very much, first of all, for taking the time to interview me. I'm really excited about this. A bit about myself before we jump into the content. So yes, I'm an innovation practitioner. Yes, I started off pretty much like yourself. I had a couple of companies of my own. Then I worked with a lot of startups and with a lot of accelerator programs around the world, mainly in Berlin and in London. But then I was really fascinated by a question, and the question was, why does innovation always happen outside large organizations? And trying to pursue that, I got on the bandwagon, if you want to say, of corporate innovation. So I started working with a bunch of corporations on developing products from within, and then moving beyond that and thinking about governance structure, change of processes, and change of cultural organization to allow these companies to be able to innovate and stay relevant in the era of fast change. And this is where we got all the insight for the corporate startup book.
Excellent. Good. Very good. I wanted to focus on this whole concept around what's the return on investment, right, on innovation. So let me start at a kind of fairly high level. So when you're first talking to, let's say, a set of senior executives in a company that are thinking about going in on their innovation journey, what's the best way to frame the conversation around the rationale for why they should do this, what the benefits are?
Right. Whenever I'm in a position to talk with executives about why they should be investing in innovation, I usually take the conversation outside the company. I usually start by asking them if they have a health insurance. And funny enough, most of the people have a health insurance, and they pay monthly for that. And what's really interesting about the whole health insurance thing is that the net present value of the health insurance is always negative. And people are happy to have a negative NPV on their health insurance, because basically this is telling you that you are healthy and you stayed more outside the hospital than in the hospital. But what the health insurance gives you, it gives you the opportunity to be able to take that skiing trip and not worry about stuff, to be able to ride your bike on let's say a rainy day and not worry about anything. In the same way, investing in innovation is a health insurance for the corporation. Basically, the investment that you make in innovation today is going to allow for your company to still stay relevant in the future. So it acts exactly like a health insurance. You're building the options to be able to pursue those growth avenues if need be, or if you find them interesting later on.
And so, okay, good. So I like the whole idea of kind of it's an option. You're buying an option that you can exercise later, right?
Pretty much.
And the interesting thing, I mean, just to kind of drive into the analogy, right? This has some inevitability, right? Whether it's in 3 years or 5 years, 7 years, there's likely parts of your industry going to change on you. There's going to be disruptors. There's going to be other industries and other things that are going to be unforeseen. So it's just like getting sick. It probably seems like it's even more certain, right? More like death. Anyway, no, it's interesting. But let me kind of go. So that's clearly, that's a primary benefit. What are some secondary benefits that could be brought into this return on investment discussion?
Well, there's a lot of things we can talk about. We can talk about the engagement of the human resource in the organization, right? So a lot of times people leave companies because they find their work not meaningful or not engaging enough. And it's not rarely that you see people leaving a large organization to go and pursue their ambitions with a startup. Or sometimes you see people that had this great idea they were not allowed to work on it in the 9-to-5 they had, and they got really frustrated and they leave together with some of their colleagues. They move on and they create the company outside. There's actually an example I like giving when I do some workshops around a company called Aardvark. So the story behind Aardvark is it's actually really, really funny. There were two Google product owners that said that the semantic search Google is doing is not really relevant and is not really working for everybody. So they decided to create a company, a project basically, that instead of asking semantic questions like best pizza in town, for example, you would ask, where is the best pizza in town? Or can you recommend me the best pizza in town? Of course, this was far from Google's vision of what search should be. And Google decided not to finance this. The two guys got really frustrated with this and they left the company. And they created their own company. They founded this company called Aardvark. And little by little, they innovated and they experimented a lot. What's funny, what ended up happening is that Google bought this company for $200 million. Like 2 years later or 18 months later, Google went back to them and they bought this company for $200 million. Now I'm asking myself, did Google win or lose in this venture? Because it seems to me that if they would have just continued paying the salaries of those two individuals, financed them with a small team, they could have achieved the same result, but in a more economical way.
That's an interesting point because I agree, and I also have some questions because I think that it's, you know, kind of innovation is in large part context, right? Because I know, for instance, Cisco historically, right, when they had people with great ideas, they knew that trying to get them to develop that idea within Cisco was insurmountable. So they would basically pay them to go and do this elsewhere with an option to buy, right? And that was because I think Cisco's culture, for instance, was so, kind of resistant to this kind of innovation, whereas I would be surprised because Google in itself is fundamentally oriented towards, you know, kind of looking at these other things. So it's interesting, right? In Google's case, maybe there was a different way to do it. Yeah, but yeah, I see your point. Interesting.